Joining me today is repeat guest Dr. Andrew Kolarik, who's an information securities consultant and an author. He was on a year ago to talk about, what were we talking about?
Cyber terrorism.
Yeah, cyber terrorism, and we get a little bit into identity theft, and all that stuff is still going on, and I think it's getting worse.
Well, it's at an epidemic level now.
But that's not what we're here to talk about today. We're actually going to talk about data brokering, which is something that's lately hit the news. And it's been going on for years, but most of us have no clue what it is or what these companies do that are data brokers. So let's thank you for joining me, first of all.
Well, hey, it's great. It's always great to be here. Now, commercial data brokers have been around for quite some time, and they primarily support folks like law enforcement, insurance agencies, and so forth. But their business has now blossomed into something completely different. Basically, what a commercial data broker does is, through various partnerships and alliances, they gather, store, and sell personal information that is public, semi-public, and private in nature. Public data would consist basically of birth date, records, licenses of all kinds, such as marriage, medical, professional, donations, voter records, criminal, civil court records, etc. This is all public information. Semi-public is stuff that generally is not for mass consumption, such as details found in online dating profiles, telephone directories, other services that maintain customer-provided details, of a public nature, though. Private data consists of contact details, name, address, phone number, key identifying numbers such as Social Security numbers, taxpayer ID, personal financial and health records, and by the way, including your DNA records.
Huh.
That was an interesting note. As well as employment and credit histories. So you have these three different classifications of data that they are accumulating. They're building a comprehensive profile on each and every one of us.
Well, how do they get the information? What bothered me was that I recently had a son in Thanksgiving 2005, and all of a sudden I've been inundated with garbage in my mailbox. So that means that the hospital must have sold my information to somebody.
What happens is they may not have sold it, and they may have sold it.
Okay.
Okay. I don't want to accuse any given organization. But what they may do is exchange your data for other data, which then gets brokered and sold to marketing concerns, other various uses. A lot of our personal data is now being given to the government, to law enforcement, as a form of passing certain protection rights. You know, you have some very, very large commercial concerns that feel that if they know a lot about us, they can then plan their corporate strategies, they can manage our social lives, they can regulate and control our activities, and so forth.
Well, sure, whenever you go to the grocery store, if you have one of those special cards, they don't just use that just to give you the discounts, they use that to register all the information on what you purchased.
And they justify it by giving you a discount. However, you can get that discount by just asking the clerk to swipe their own card. So this is now prolific. I mean, we can't even purchase food without having a history built up on us. And once they have that history, it's being freely shared or sold, repackaged. Here's the bad part. Once it's out there, it never goes away. It doesn't have a shelf life.
All right, is that part of the big problem, or what is the big problem with data brokers?
Well, all right, there's three main problems as I see it. One is these companies have mishandled our data, such as ID theft rings, have legally purchased our personal information and have had their systems breached resulting in more of our information being stolen. Good examples, ChoicePoint last year sold 145,000 records to an ID theft ring in February. LexisNexis allowed 30,000 records to fall into the hands of thieves. And a lot more. Over 100 million Americans have been put at risk due to a combination of abuse and theft for identity theft. Two, the second major problem is these companies are subsidiaries of international companies. Now, think about this a moment. Let's look at the bigger picture. We live in a competitive world. We live in a globally networked world. Now companies and individuals from all over the world have access to us, to our identities, to our personal information, and that puts us at risk for a whole lot of different things. The third problem is these companies are not just supporting our way of life. They're profiting. They're making billions on our personal information, which in order for us to do anything, we're required to provide. So, for instance, ChoicePoint, their revenues for 2005 were a little over 1 billion US. Westlaw, which is another provider of this information, their numbers are buried into a company called Thompson's, who's a big publisher, of 8.7 billion in 2005. LexisNexis revenues were 2.1 billion euro in 2005. Experience, who is a credit agency, they had revenues of 1.4 billion. Okay, now, and there's so many other companies out there making money on our personal information.
Okay, but the big question, wait, I'm interrupting you, because the thing that I don't get is, what are they doing with this information? Why is that I like to shop at Tops versus Giant Eagle or Giant Eagle versus Tops so to these people?
A lot of the momentum in a capitalist society is to take whatever information is available and do strategic planning. Okay, this is classical business school model. This is the MBAs of the world. The more information you can get about your consumer, the better able you are to predict what they're going to purchase and plan for it. By planning for those future purchases, research and development, product development, marketing, outreach programs, integrated entertainment, sponsorships, all these things supposedly can come from our purchase patterns. The problem isn't just marketing, though, and strategic planning. This information is being proliferated and sold and packaged to all kinds of entities and all kinds of interests. It's not just how to sell us more things.
Okay. So, we talked about what the problem is with them, but does this information stay in their computers forever?
Well, it can stay in there as long as they would like it to stay in there. And the fact of the matter is, the current approach to managing our information is, once we collect it, it never goes away. Now, I'm not the same person I was 20 years ago. Yet, my information from 20 years ago is still out there. And I think part of the problem is, we don't have any control over this unless we rise up to and say, hey, enough is enough. There's a lot of other issues that go with this. One of the main things that here's a good example. I wanted to get a digital subscriber line for my home. And I looked online and I found this wonderful $14.95 a month, nice, inexpensive. I called them up. They were called Verizon Online. This is an actual, I've documented this. Called them up. They asked for my name. I gave it. They had my phone number from caller ID. They plugged that all in, and then they pulled up records from 15 years ago in another county. This is a big concern, okay? And I said, you know, I'm not real comfortable with this. All I want to do is, you know, find out what your plan is about. They continued to push me for my information. They asked my permission to access my records through Verizon, and I didn't give them permission. I said, listen, I want to end the call. Thank you very much. Within a few minutes, because I keep track of who comes to my website, within a few minutes of my phone call, they had gone to my website. They had Googled my name and then took my address, phone number, all that other information, because within a couple weeks, I started getting inundated with a whole host of information.
From Verizon Online?
Yes.
So what did you do?
Well, I called Verizon corporate, and I said, excuse me, are you aware of these people and what they're doing? Well, they're one of our subcontractors. Said, yes, but are you aware that they're not just selling your service? They're accumulating my information and making use of it. Oh, well, we'll note that in your records and we'll forward that. And I never heard anything back. So this is standard practice. Now, here's the interesting thing. If I want to purchase the same DSL service through Verizon Direct, it's $30 a month. Twice as much. Now, how do you justify that price difference if you're not taking that information and selling it? There's more value in the information than the service. Otherwise, you can't price it in that setup, in that situation.
Last week, President Bush's administration came out with their little memorandum of what they want. Because of all the VA information that was stolen, they came out with what other government agencies need to do to protect people's information. What did they say should be done?
Well, part of what was issued from the president was a memorandum requiring all federal employees to encrypt their laptops. Now,
what does that entail?
Well, it entails taking a laptop, the hard drive, any data or programs stored on the laptop, and essentially scrambling it so that in the event that the laptop is stolen, thieves aren't able to read the data. The problem, though, is bigger than that. What is our personal information doing on the laptops?
Right. Right.
Okay. Why are people taking it home? Why do they need to transport, you know, a million records to a business meeting?
And the question is, though, too, and we talked about this before we turned the mics on, is what are these organizations doing once the information is stolen to change their modus operandi? For example, I was a student at Kent State University, and my information was on that laptop that was stolen. Did Kent State do anything after that laptop was stolen besides fire the person who brought the laptop home? Did they move everything off of everybody else's laptops and put everything on a secure server so that nobody's bringing that information home again?
Well, they weren't really required by law to do anything. In February, in the state of Ohio, the governor signed into law a security breach disclosure law that said if personal information is stolen and people are at risk of identity theft, you have to notify those people who will be impacted. Prior to February of this year, there was no requirement. Number two, you're required in this crazy scheme of things to check your own credit, to clean up the mess that they create, to prove your innocence that you didn't apply for those credit cards and you didn't take out that mortgage and et cetera, et cetera. So, and that still hasn't changed. When a breach occurs and someone uses that information, It's your problem. You get to clean up that mess. Now, you can sue.
I was going to ask that, okay.
In a civil court. However, with the Veteran Affairs issue, it's only going to come to maybe $1,000 or $1,500 per person. Well, 30, 40 hours of your life and needless headaches and concerns and so forth are now gone.
Right. So what, we sort of took a tangent and I'm sorry, but what can we do about, it ties into the data brokering though as well, I think. Because it seems like our government isn't willing to do anything about the identity thefts that's going on right now. Legal, I think, with the data brokering, and illegal.
Well, first of all, I think that various aspects of our government want to encourage this continued data collection because it gives them power, knowledge about us. Okay, so there's an initial resistance to control this type of behavior. A lot of the federal activity, both the Senate and the House, failed to produce any tangible privacy legislation. And anything that they do produce seems to be geared towards punishing the thieves of the data and maybe fining the brokers. But the fact of the matter is, the question at hand is, who really owns the data? And their efforts seem to say, the data brokers own our data.
And I find that appalling, to say the least. I'm being very mild and gentle right now, but I find that that's my information, and nobody has the right to own any information about me except me.
Well, once enough people step up and say enough is enough, then maybe our government will do something.
Can I write to any of these data brokers and say that you remove all of my information from your files immediately?
Yes. In fact, there is a website out there called Privacy Rights Clearinghouse, and I'm going to have a link at my webpage at www.andrewkolarik.com in my press room. I have a list of my media appearances. This radio show is there. Your picture is there. Right next to your picture will be a link that will take you to the Privacy Rights Clearinghouse website, and they list all the data brokers who will allow you to remove your information and those that won't, and the contact details for both. That's a very valuable thing. I would caution that if you're not in one of their databases, in the process of requesting that you be removed, don't disclose too much about yourself.
Because they could create, it's sort of like the FBI. If you write to the FBI and ask for your file, they create one.
Exactly. Now, I can't say that they create one, but yes, it's the same concept. So, you know.
Yeah, I have to say, I don't know if that's true. It's just something I've heard from other people.
Now, at the state level, there is things that are happening, but it's mostly geared around breach notification laws. And all the states are starting to adopt these. But they're mostly focused around identity risk, identity theft risk. They still make us clean up after their mess. Now, there is a new concept, and maybe it's not so new, but I'm trying to make it new. For the last year, I've been in my presentations and radio shows and so forth. I've been promoting the concept. In fact, I promoted it in my latest book, Cyberterrorism, Political and Economic Implications, that information should become a property right. What that means is we own our data. Now, in order to do that, we need a public discussion, a public initiative to create a delineation between public and private data. You would create this through joint initiatives, businesses, government, privacy advocacy groups, and citizens. This way, you know, for instance, is my taxpayer ID numbers, is my telephone number my information or somebody else's? Is it private or is it public? And once you delineate between public and private, now you have a new set of rules.
But in talking with you, it sounds like the government is not going to support something like this.
Well, there's an election coming up. And there's an election 2 years from there, and 2 years from there. And enough people are injured through the theft of our information, then you're going to see some kind of an initiative moving forward. Here's one major concept that we need to remember. If we own the information, we can demand a statutory shelf life. You can't keep it past X number of years of functional use. It must be deleted securely. Any kind of breach would have a criminal aspect. Classified data in the government, when it is lost, has a criminal component. Why can't we be given that same consideration?
So how many people are on board with what you're proposing?
Well, I've been talking to various people, outlets. It's starting to resonate. I'm looking for any kind of legislators who will talk to me, who would be willing to sponsor legislation of this fashion. Let's get the debate going. Let's move it forward. There are some businesses that see the value in this because they don't want to be liable for the information.
So people don't want to be responsible. So, I mean, that's the thing, I guess. So I can sue. If my information is used, I could technically sue Kent State University.
Yes. You can sue Kent if you can prove damages to your identity, to your way of life. If you can't show that breach caused damage to you, you cannot sue at this time. Now, if it is your information you have entrusted to them and it is a property, that's like me lending you my car and now my car is gone. Now I can prove there is damage, regardless of what happens to that car. And this is the key concept to making information a property right. It is ours. And entrusting it is like entrusting a physical, tangible object. If it is not in your possession, intact, then there is a damage.
But can I? But I guess the question from talking with you is, I thought it was a clear-cut case for most people. You know, this company lost my information. You know, the VA had my information stolen. But now, how do I know that it was because of the VAs? How do I know that a data broker didn't just sell that information?
Well, and that's the problem. You don't. And this is why they're not concerned. This is why it's not a big deal. So when the Veteran Affairs thing happened, several friends of mine in Washington said that the civil servant bureaucrats said, oh, well, that's their problem, okay? When the civil servant's information was stolen a month later, they were up in arms screaming, hollering, how could you allow this to happen? So this is what's going on, is that until it affects the people who have the ability to do something about it, it's not their problem. There's no ramification. There's no consequence, except perhaps a little bit of money towards fixing a credit problem. But this goes far beyond credit. This affects your life. This allows access to who you are, how you live, and all the relationships that you maintain.
One of the things that you mentioned in the outline that we're going by was that if I go to the three credit bureaus, I now can go there for free once a year and get a credit report on myself and to check the information. Why is that bad?
Well, now, it's not a bad thing to monitor your credit, except in getting your free credit report, you get to update your standing with the credit agencies. You're letting them know you still exist, that you're still alive, you're at a given address, you're at a given phone number, email address, etc. So checking up on them. Managing their lack of management is actually giving them more information, current information, which is valuable to them. So they basically put us in a position where no matter what we do, we have to tell them what we're doing and what we're about and where we're about in order to protect ourselves.
We're almost out of time. We have a minute left. What is next for Americans with data brokering? What do we do now?
Well, let me maybe solicit people's self-interest. If you've got, you know, a $10, $12, $20 billion industry on information that is ours, wouldn't you like a piece of that?
Yeah.
I mean, think about it. If I'm going to be put at risk, what happened to the concept of risk versus return? If I'm going to be put at risk, I want a return. I want to decide if I want to be put at risk. And that's, I think, what's going to come to terms. The problem lies is it's going to be disputed through the courts instead of through good business practices. And that's kind of what I see coming.
Okay. Tell me once again how my listeners can get in touch with you, can find out more information about this and the other stuff that you're working on.
Well, you can go to my website at www.andrewcolaric.com. I've got a list of services. I've got a list of the media appearances, presentations, contact details. Give me a holler and let me know.
All right. Thank you so much for joining me.